It's going down right now with the Joseph Bard Podcast. Make sure y'all watch the Joseph Bard Podcast ringing off right now. I am the KID, the Kid Capri. You know what it is. Salute. Block party action. Me.
Hey, everybody. We're here with Mr. Ruben Cortez. Ruben Cortez, candidato, candidate for State House Representative 37. Welcome to the show, Joseph Bard Podcast, Ruben.
I'm happy to be here, brother. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Fíjate que, you know, just trying to stay warm because there's a cold front coming in.
Well, you're wearing that Metallica shirt, so you look like you're ready to stay warm, man.
I hope so, man. If everything goes as is, I think we should be just fine. Pero gracias a Dios, thank you for running, man. There, it takes a lot for an individual to say, sabes que, I want to be on the ballot. But this is nothing new to you. Am I correct in saying that?
No. This is not new to me. I've been in public office since 2006.
Wow, 2006. And what have you learned in 2000, in all those 16 years?
To be a very good listener. To be a good listener and to remember that you're there to serve at the pleasure of the people that elect you, right? And so you're just as good as your ability to communicate the concerns that you're hearing out in the field, right? I think that's why I've had such success on the Texas Board of Education. I'm a good listener. I spend a lot of time in the school districts trying to understand how I can better help public school employees do the job that they do, right, through the policies that we adopt, right? I think for me, it's a little simple, right? When I first ran, it's a philosophy that I still live by today. When I got up to Austin, when I was running for this office, for me, it was simple. It was about keeping politics out of the classroom, right? How do we not make decisions from that boardroom in Austin to our classrooms, which I think is a terrible way to make policy, right? We should be making policy for education or for our communities or whatever, bottom up, right? And so If we're going to make education policy, we need to make it from our classrooms to our boardroom. And that means we got to go in there and talk to those education professionals that are being impacted by whatever work piece of information that we're going to put out into the community so that they can do the job that they do, right? And so living by that has made it easy for me because I don't ever pretend to assume that I know what educators need. Before I go to any meeting, this year, no exception, on my 10th year on the Board of Education, I ask, right? How can I help you? You put me here to serve our schools. How can I do the best job at that, right? And so,
wow. So it's a great philosophy to live by, you know, and, you know, again, going back to being a great listener. For those of you joining us, Ruben Cortez, he's been in politics since 2006, but I don't want to say politics. He's been in service of others, for the constituents of his district since 2006. Wow. What a feat, man. But hey, man, you have children, you're married, you have a loving family.
I have a wife of 22 years, 23 this summer. I have four children. I have a daughter who will be 20 next week. I have a daughter who's 18. The oldest is a senior at UTSA. The next one is a junior at St. Mary's. And then I have a daughter who's an 11th grader in Brown's taller than me. And he's only 13 and he's in seventh grade. It's crazy how big he is. He looks like he's the height of my father-in-law. And we have four dogs that are running around here, one that we bought and three that we rescued. So we have a very busy and active and full life.
What do the children say? Dad, you're going to run again? Otra vez? Or what do they say?
Man, my kids are super supportive. You know,
awesome.
So it all goes back to why I ran, right? My oldest daughter, who will be 20 next week, when she was about almost 3 years old, I want to say, we were in the home that we lived in back then. Obviously, we only had two kids at that time. But I was at the table reading the paper. Back then, I didn't read the paper on my cell phone the way I do today. I had the paper. I was reading it, right? I had it opened up and had a cup of coffee on the table and reading the newspaper. And I hear my daughter running down the hall. And I see her out of the corner of my eye as she's running into the living room. All of a sudden, she just jumps on me, gives me a giant hug with her arms and her legs, and says, "Daddy, I love you. I'm so proud of you." You know, I don't know if you're a parent or not, but I can tell you, kids don't come with instructions, right? We were totally lost when our first was born. You know, we had a lot of family support, thank God. But at the end of the day, they go home and we go home with our kid, right? And we have to make sure we know what we're doing. But fast forward to that moment, right? To that moment when that little girl is embracing me. I like to compare it to one of those scenes in a movie when someone's about to die and they see their whole life flash before their eyes. That's what I felt in that split moment, just that brief interaction with my daughter and I, as she's embracing me and giving me this amazing statement that, you know, it's just ingrained in my brain, never will forget it. "Daddy, I love you. I'm so proud of you." All I could think of was, holy shit, right? What if she wants to do half of the stuff that I did growing up, right? What am I going to tell her? What am I going to say to my daughter when she says, "Well, Dad, you did that. You did this," you know? And it goes back to my upbringing. I was blessed to grow up in a home where I had a mother and a father who loved me very much. But I had a father who, as great a man as he was to his kids, he had a vicio, and his vicio was drinking beer. And he was an alcoholic, and he didn't know how to control it. You know, it happens to a lot of people. This is a very familiar story in a lot of households. But when my father would get drunk, he'd get aggressive and violent, and he'd take it out on my mom. And so as a kid, I saw things that a child shouldn't see happening to their parent, right? And so as a result, growing up, I lashed out a lot. I rebelled a lot. My parents divorced at a young age. They became better friends, divorced than they were a married couple,
right?
You know, but these things followed me, right? So growing up in school, I lashed out a lot. I rebelled a lot, you know, caused a lot of problems. And every time I go in and visit a school district, my way of thanking them is sharing this story, because they don't know the lives that they impact. They don't know the impact that they have on any given child 10 years from now, what they could have won, that one brief interaction, what it could do to change the life of a kid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I can tell you that if not for my counselor, Felipe Trevino, and three very specific teachers and my mother's prayers, I should be dead or in jail. Right. But I'm not. Instead, I get to make decisions for 5.5 million kids. And so as that 3-year-old is embracing me, all I kept thinking was, what am I going to do different?
Right.
So that she doesn't make those same mistakes. And so a few weeks after that, I decided I was going to run for the local school board rather than, you know, have her ask me. I'm going to go out and do a lot of good things. Right. So that when she says, "Well, Dad, you did this," I can say, "Yeah, but you know what else? You know what else I did? When I was in the school board in 2006, in the year 2007, we made sure every campus had pre-K. The ones that didn't have it, we put it. The ones that had half day, we went full day. You know what else we did? We put security fences. You know what else we did? We built the first early college high school in the school district of Brownsville," right? Like all these things, right? And
right.
And somehow that service on the local school board turned into service on the Texas Board of Education. And so I tell people I'm paying penance for all of my sins and just kind of giving back. So I tell people I'm a happy warrior, man, when it comes to public education. You won't find a stronger advocate than
me. Let me tell you a little something. You know, you've been hitting on a whole bunch of items that I've been hitting on as an administrator today, actually. And the first one being that children don't come with instructions. I mean, if we had a book that tells us do this, do that, you know, we'd probably try to like follow it to the T. I mean, however, and that's one part. The other part is understanding and communicating and then setting up an example for others to follow, or, you know, create scores of change in a positive way, right? So, yeah, I mean, everything you're talking about, it probably resonates with a lot of parents.
Yeah.
And that's the God honest truth, man. Thank you so much for being here and sharing this message here on the podcast, because our listeners, you know, they always want to know, who is Ruben Cortez? Guinness, why should we even pay attention to Ruben Cortez? So I've heard you've done service since 2006, local school board. Then you went into the State Board of Education in Texas, which you currently said, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go for something bigger. What is that position that you're going for now?
Well, and you know what? It's not that I don't want to do it. It's just that I think I can be more effective on public education policy in the House, because we enforce policy on one end. And in this position that I'm running for now for state representative, we can create policy.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, as someone who's in our schools, you understand the challenges that are going on, right?
Right.
I'm married to an elementary principal. My wife's a lifelong educator. I have family who are in education. I hear it from them all the time. I hear it from all the superintendents I talk to. I have great relationships with every superintendent in my district. I mean, not a single one of them from La Jolla to Port Isabel up to San Perlita in Willacy County. Not a single one, whether it's Dr. Sines or Dr. Capistran in Port Isabel or Albert Pena in San Perlita or anywhere in between. Will tell you that I'm not present all the time. They need me. I'm there. Right. And so understanding what has happened to public education, understanding that our public school employees have been underappreciated, undervalued, and underpaid, overburdened and overstressed with a mountain and a plethora of unfunded mandates. There's so much that I can fix. There's so much that I can do instantly when I get there, legislation that I would file to remove certain things, to roll back certain things, to fix unintended consequences of a bill that was filed in the state legislature that maybe when it started, it was well-intentioned, but then all of these unintended side effects are happening that are causing public school employees to do more and more work, right? And I'll be able to address those things now.
Right on.
And for me, that's important, because if we don't, it's very clear. If we want to have a solid state, we need to have a great education foundation. We have a commissioner of education who was appointed under Abbott. He's been there for a little over 6 years. I've served with him that long. I've served with previous commissioners prior to that, but he's not done a lot to advance on public education. When he came in, we ranked 43rd in the nation in education attainment. 6 years later, we're still there. We're still there, right?
For individuals that are listening right now, you know, because I have worldwide listeners. I don't know if you know this, but we're talking about the state of Texas in the United States, and we're talking about how an individual can impact constituents at a larger seat. So Ruben Cortez, currently still with the State Board of Education, is going out there right now campaigning for the House District of 37. And what we're talking about is that he has served with the commissioner of the State of Texas of Education. And we were ranked 43rd in the state. Currently, we're still we're still currently ranked 43rd in the nation. I apologize. Now, that's status quo. I mean, what's happening? I know COVID happened, but
yeah, this is bigger than COVID though, because I mean, if you break down the data for the state of Texas, and there was an article that was done, or is a study that was done by the Texas Tribune or the Austin Statesman. I'm having a difficult time remembering which one, but one of those two publications did a story about economically disadvantaged children mm-hmm. and public school systems. And what they found that if you're going to grow up in a home where you're living below the medium household income or in a house of poverty, right?
You're living below $30,000 a year.
Yes. And what that study found is that if your best opportunity at a world-class education in an area, they RGV, El Paso, it was Panhandle, it was DFW, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, all the major metroplexes, right? They compared them and said, if you're going to be an economically disadvantaged child, the best place that you can possibly get an education and be successful is in the Rio Grande Valley. So despite everything that's happening in other parts of Texas, this area, which is known as Region 1, and I failed to mention this, I also serve on the Region 1 Board of Directors. I've been on that board for 12 years. This area, which is from Laredo to Point Isabel and all of Willacy County, those eight counties that make up Region 1 Education Service Center, have outperformed Texas across every measured index that the state rates on any accountability matrix for the last 6 years, since that commissioner has been here. We're outperforming the entire state. I mean, obviously the numbers may be a little different right now in this pandemic, but prior to the pandemic, we were crushing across every measured index in Texas.
I mean, and to add to that, I mean, you're looking at predominantly bilingual individuals. You're looking at predominantly individual that are understanding two different cultures, that are understanding the Mexican culture and the United States culture, which we call the Tejano culture. Right. I mean,
well, it's even worse than that, though, because, yeah. So, yes. But on top of that, this is the poorest area in the country, poorest area in the state.
Yeah.
Of the 40 districts, of the 38 districts and 10 charter school districts that are part of Region 1, of those 38 systems and those 10 charter systems, 15 of those are in the bottom 15 per capita. If you rank wealth per district per child from the bottom to the top, the bottom 15 are right here in Region 1. And still, we outperform other areas of Texas. I mean, if you took a student out of EdCal Chelsea, if you took a student out of Brownsville ISD, or out of La Villa, or Monte Alto, or Raymondville, and that child moved to Austin, Texas to go get this same education, and that child, because mom and dad moved to Austin, and now, you know, Josabad and Ruben are kicking it in Austin ISD Elementary, right? That school district's going to get an additional $1,100 in funding for you and I if we were learning over there. Mm-hmm. You know, why? Same kid, just a change of a zip code, but they're worth $1,100 more. We're worth $1,100 more over there. And that's the state average. That's in Austin. But let's say, you know, mom and dad get tired of living in Austin. They move out towards the Woodlands. Well, guess what? We're worth about $1,300 or $1,400 more than we are in Austin, which is about $2,500 or $2,600 more. And we're worth right here in EdCouch or Edinburgh or Brownsville just by changing a zip code. And these are the types of problems that we have. These are the types of disparities and inequities that exist. And that's not even the worst of it. No, we got tired of living in the Woodlands, right? Now mom and dad are going to move up towards Dallas. They're going to go live in Highland Park. Now they're getting about $3,600 more per student than they would if we lived right here in Brownsville. So you and I would be worth $3,600 more in Highland Park.
Let me ask this question, because again, going back to what our listeners know, you started off the show with saying that education is at the premise of everything, right? Do you feel that our constituents, do you feel that our audience members, do you feel that the average individual that is living in this area is educated on these topics? Do you feel that they should know about this? And if not, you know, why should they get involved?
I don't think everything that I just shared with you, that if you took that child from Yellow Jacket Country or from where my daughter's at Veterans High School in Brownsville, and we put them in Austin or put them in the Woodlands, and that they're worth more over there. Average everyday Texans do not know this. And that's why elections matter. That's why elections have consequences. I understand this. I know this. On the board that I serve on, I can't fix that. So we don't address funding issues. The only thing that we fund are the instructional materials and technology. That's it. We don't pay for salaries. We don't pay for buildings. We don't pay the M&O, the maintenance and operations. We don't do any of that, right? But on the state legislative side, I could. And I understand that there is a big funding gap problem, right? And there's so many inequities that exist. You know, it's like that dicho, right? Todos hijos de Dios, o todos hijos del diablo, right?
Right.
We all bleed the same color. Why am I worth $3,600 less than that kid in Highland Park, right? When we're still clearly outperforming that district down here.
All of this goes back to, at the end of the day, what a lot of people like to say that it boils down to. It boils down to money. I mean, it boils down to tax rates, tax bases that are happening. Stop me if I'm wrong, but these items where individuals are worth more in certain areas, is equally, it has to do with the tax base that is set in those areas.
Well, and so on that tax base comment, what most everyday Texans also fail to know, because, you know, people are busy with their day-to-day life, right?
Right.
They're not going to, this isn't front of mind. They know they pay property taxes. They know they pay sales tax. They know they pay all types of taxes for whatever they do, right?
Right.
But over the last 10 years, literally since I've been on the Board of Education, the Texas legislature, the body that I want to run for now, has shifted the burden of funding public education to you and to me and to every other taxpayer out there. When I came on the Board of Education, the state of Texas was funding education at like 56%. That's what they were paying from state resources. Today, it's like 38%, and they've reversed it. It used to be less reliance on property tax, and now it's a higher reliance on property tax. And they'll tell you, you know, some of the folks out there are going to tell you, oh, well, they lowered the tax rate statewide, right? They compressed it. They did all of these things, and it's going to save taxpayers a whole bunch of money. A lot of that is true, but then what happens is, you know, it's like they robbed from Peter to pay Paul, right? They compress the tax rate and tell you you're going to save all this money. And then they're going to pick up the phone and call the state appraiser and say, now we need you to raise property rates, property values. We can't charge them a higher rate, but if you charge them more on their house, we're going to collect more, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they go back and say, well, we haven't raised your taxes. What bullshit, man. It's like, it's a distinction. It's a distinction without a difference, right? And it's just, it's political double talk is what it is, because yeah, they compressed your rate. Yeah, they're not raising the rate anymore, but they're raising your property value and you're paying more because your property's worth more money.
That's why I never invite Paul to my house. Shout out to Paul. But yeah, man, it makes sense. You know, you can't have one without the other. That's just very, and for individuals that don't understand that, let me break it down in layman's terms. What's happening here, bottom line, is yes, they'll paint a picture that we're going to decrease property values, or we're going to say no taxes on property taxes, but we got to get money somewhere for the houses. We got to get money somewhere for the streets, for the hospitals, for the schools. And that's what people don't understand sometimes. I mean, who likes to pay taxes? I don't think a lot of people like to pay taxes. I mean, shoot, but
nobody.
It's a necessity. But needless to say, man, that's a lot of information. And I don't think it's well communicated, or in simply in layman's terms, been communicated effectively.
It hasn't. And that's just education, right? Like, we're not even talking about the reliability of our electric grid. We got lucky a few weeks ago, right? We had this cold spell. It was 2 days, 48 hours. Last year it was 139 hours. I mean, I don't know if you had power, but a lot of us didn't have power, right?
I paid my bill. I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding. But no,
even
I
if you
did.
Paid your
I
bill, the power went out because
that's what I heard
of that freeze that we had last year around Valentine's.
Yeah.
We had over 230, 240 Texans die in that freeze, either carbon monoxide poisoning or they froze to death. Like, what an awful way to die, right?
You're right.
And all because the governor refuses to enforce natural gas companies to weatherize their equipment for times of freeze. They don't have to shut production down, which shuts production down and makes it harder for these coal plants to operate, which provide the energy that we need, right? And then they reduce the amount of wind energy that they take, so that they're reliant on coal and natural gas. We have a lot of solar and we have a lot of wind, but they reduce the use of that. You know, just a few weeks ago, before this 2 day cold freeze came in across the state, there was a big meeting with all the natural gas companies, and they were all fighting about what might happen or what might not happen. Right. Yeah. Thank God it wasn't bad, but you know, and then what happens shortly after that freeze, they're charging billions of dollars. And who's going to pay for it? We are. The ratepayer, the people who pay the utility bills, we're going to pay it. And guess what? Within a couple of weeks, Governor Abbott took $1 million donation from one of those companies, from the CEO of one of those natural gas companies that was going to make like $7 billion on the backs of Texans.
Wow.
The CEO gave Greg Abbott $1 million donation, and a bunch of other companies combined added in like another 2.3. He raised $3.3 million from natural gas companies, while 200 plus Texans died. I mean, if you ask me, I'd say Governor Abbott is complicit in the deaths of those people, because all he's got to say is weatherize your plants, get ready for the next freeze, because I'm here to serve you, and Texans shouldn't be dying under my watch.
I mean, that sounds like a simple, common sense thing to do, right?
But it isn't. He plays politics with everything, including the lives of everyday, hardworking Americans. And who are the people who died in this? The poorest of the poor is Black and brown people. It's you think the guy living in Highland Park froze to death in his mansion? No, of course not.
Hey, Ruben, I'm getting a text message from some of our listeners, and they want to know a couple of items. These are very basic questions that they have, but let me ask the first one. Vanilla or chocolate? What kind of cake do you like?
So I'm a marmal cake kind of guy.
What is that? Now you got to educate me on that. What is a marmal cake? I've never heard
of it. Marmal cake is chocolate and vanilla mixed in. It's like a swirl.
Wow.
Yeah. They sell it at Sam's.
I've never heard of. I mean, that's a little foo-foo for me. I have no idea what the heck a marmalade cake is.
When you have kids like I do, you go buy sheet cakes all the time, right? Because you celebrate four birthdays a year, and year after year, you're having piñatas and everything. And so, one year we accidentally got a marmalade cake, which is a chocolate and vanilla swirl. It's not like all blended up, but it'll be like this much chocolate, this much vanilla, and it's just like interwoven in there, right? But it's delicious, right?
Here's the next question. What is your favorite basketball team?
Oh, man. It has to be the San Antonio Spurs.
Oh, man. Okay, so because you're a Texan? Because I grew up a Lakers fan. I mean, that's just me. But is it because you're a Texas? You're born and raised in Texas? Because I hear a lot of
it. It's because that's the only team I've ever gone to see.
Okay.
And because I saw it, I just fell in love with it, right? And
yeah.
And that was it. So for no other reason.
All right. And here's the last question. They want to know, what is playing on your Spotify playlist right now?
Oh, man, let me tell you. I'll tell you right now. I was just on it earlier. Let's see what's on there right now. I'll tell you what my next song is. My Spotify. Man, you threw me for a loop. Let's see. I'll tell you right now. Spotify. Look, Imagine Dragons.
That's a good one. I mean, Imagine Dragons. I tell my wife, you know, if we're going to take our kids to see a next concert, it's going to be Imagine Dragons. They got a lot of hits.
Oh, man, don't let my kids hear you talk about concerts. I've been to too many Harry Styles concerts myself. Billie Eilish and all kinds of other
stuff. We were just talking about Harry Styles the other day. We're probably going to have to see you at the next one.
Yeah.
Hey, Ruben, man, it's been a pleasure having you on, and it's been, wonderful talking about some of these items. Before we go, let's talk a little bit more about your campaign and what it means to the voter right now. So go ahead and tell me once again, what are you running for? What's your purpose? Why are you doing this?
I'm running for state representative in District 37. You know, I'm running because I believe Texas families deserve better. I have a proven track record of service on the Board of Education. And so I'm just telling people, send me back to Austin. But I don't want to just focus on schools. I want to focus on our entire communities. I represent a Board of Education district right now that is 17 counties. And in those 17 counties, I have 16 state representatives and 4 Texas senators. I have a relationship with every one of them on the Democratic side and the Republican side. When a new legislative session begins, I'll go and I'll sit there. I'll go sit with Todd Hunter, chairman from Corpus Christi. I'll go sit with Senator Lois Kokhorst, the Tea Party darling from Victoria, Texas. And we'll sit and I'll ask them, how can I help you make education better? I'm your Board of Education member. This isn't a political issue. Public education shouldn't be a political football. How can I help you, right? So I go in there. I have those relationships already. So putting me back in Austin in a different building across the street from the building that I serve in, I'm already going to have relationships on both sides of the aisle. Not to mention, I've already been endorsed by most of the Valley delegation of state reps down here, Terry Canales, Sergio Munoz, Oscar Longoria, State Senator Rolando Gutierrez, James Tellerico, state representative from Taylor, Texas, or the new Samsung semiconductor plant is about to be built. State rep from Houston, Cristina Morales, has also endorsed me. I have relationships in the Houston delegation, in the San Antonio delegation, in the El Paso delegation, in the Dallas-Fort Worth delegation. Why does that matter? It matters because if what happened last year when the legislature convened happens again next year, if we have a outbreak of COVID cases and they shut the Capitol down to people that are coming to advocate for their causes, then you want to have somebody in that seat that has relationships across every edge and every corner of the state of Texas to get things done for the district that it's representing, to get things done for the state of Texas, right? And I believe that I'm that guy because, you know, I like to tell people I'm that happy warrior, right? I'm still paying penance for my sins. And when this, and you know, and yeah, it sounds funny, right? But when this is over and my kids ask, I'm going to have a lot to be proud of because I've done a lot and I've done it by working with outside groups. I've done it with working with every education group in the state of Texas. That's why when I announced, every education group came out with me. That's why when I announced, I had come out already with like 30 endorsements and all of the state rep endorsements and the senator endorsement. They came out with me on day one because they knew what was on the line. They knew that this position needed somebody who was going to be ready on day one. And that's what I'm offering, right? I'm offering this opportunity to continue this service on the state that I have on the State Board of Education, but to the legislature, and to do the very same thing that I'm doing there, but in this position, not to go to Austin and to assume that I know what the city of Harlingen needs, or the city of San Benito, or the city of Brownsville, or the city of Raymondville, or Willacy County, or any of the communities in the district that I'm running to represent. I don't want to assume that I know what they need. I don't want to assume that I know what first responders need. I don't want to go up there and say, I know what to do to fix this for you. I know what needs to be fixed. We need to fix drainage and flooding. We need to fix the grid. We need to expand Medicaid. Those are all big talking points, right? And those are great. And I will work on all of those things. But you want somebody who's going to be responsive, who's going to sit, have town hall meetings with your communities and say, tell me what your priorities are, and then send me back to Austin to get to work on it, right? And that's the kind of leadership that you're going to get from me. What I'm doing now, this idea of making decisions from the Capitol to our communities doesn't work for me. We're going to make these decisions from our cities, from our towns, from our counties, back up to Austin. My actions will be guided by the people who I represent.
Awesome.
And the same way I do it in education today, I'm going to do the same thing in the state legislature. And I think we're going to create great policy. I think we're going to create great friends. And I think we're going to have a very successful region as a result of it. And we're going to continue to excel.
Well, thank you so much, Ruben. Mr. Ruben Cortez for House Representative 37 in Texas. Thank you so much for stopping by with the Joe's Blog Podcast. We really appreciate you, man. Don't forget about us. Thank you so much for being here. Once again, we'll see you at the next episode come next week. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you. Have a good night.